Chapter 15. The words were projected sharply against Lily's silence, and she saw in a flash that her own act had given them their emphasis. In ordinary talk they might have passed unheeded, but following on her prolonged pause they acquired a special meaning. She felt, without looking, that Selden had immediately seized it, and would inevitably connect the allusion with her visit to himself. The consciousness increased her irritation against Rosedale, but also her feeling that now, if ever, was the moment to propitiate him, hateful as it was to do so in Selden's presence. "How do you know the other women don't go to my dressmaker?" she returned. "Why, you see, I'm not afraid to give her address to my friends." Her glance and accent so plainly included Rosedale in this privileged circle that his small eyes puckered with gratification, and a knowing smile drew up his mustache. "By Jove, you needn't be," he declared. "You could give him the whole outfit and win at a canter." "Ah, that's nice of you. And it would be nicer still if you would carry me off to a quiet corner and get me a glass of lemonade or some innocent drink before we all have to rush for the train." She turned away as she spoke, letting him strut at her side through the gathering groups on the terrace, while every nerve in her throbbed with the consciousness of what Selden must have thought of the scene. But under her angry sense of the perverseness of things, and the light surface of her talk with Rosedale, a third idea persisted. She did not mean to leave without an attempt to discover the truth about Percy Gryce. Chance, or perhaps his own resolve, had kept them apart since his hasty withdrawal from Bellomont. But Miss Bart was an expert in making the most of the unexpected, and the distasteful incidents of the last few minutes the revelation to Selden of precisely that part of her life which she most wished him to ignore increased her longing for shelter, for escape from such humiliating contingencies. Any definite situation would be more tolerable than this buffeting of chances, which kept her in an attitude of uneasy alertness toward every possibility of life. Indoors there was a general sense of dispersal in the air, as of an audience gathering itself up for departure after the principal actors had left the stage. But among the remaining groups, Lily could discover neither Gryce nor the youngest Miss Van Osburgh. That both should be missing struck her with foreboding, and she charmed Mr. Rosedale by proposing that they should make their way to the conservatories at the farther end of the house. There were just enough people left in the long suite of rooms to make their progress COMP 101 greater than spicuous, and Lily was aware of being followed by looks of amusement and interrogation, which glanced off as harmlessly from her indifference as from her companion's self-satisfaction. She cared very little at that moment about being seen with Rosedale. All her thoughts were centered on the object of her search. The latter, however, was not discoverable in the conservatories, and Lily, oppressed by a sudden conviction of failure, was casting about for a way to rid herself of her now superfluous companion, when they came upon Mrs. Van Osburgh, flushed and exhausted, but beaming with the consciousness of duty performed. She glanced at them a moment with the benign, but vacant eye of the tired hostess, to whom her guests have become mere whirling spots in a kaleidoscope of fatigue. Then her attention became suddenly fixed, and she seized on Miss Bart with a confidential gesture. "My dear Lily, I haven't had time for a word with you, and now I suppose you are just off. Have you seen Evie? She's been looking everywhere for you. She wanted to tell you her little secret, but I dare say you have guessed it already. The engagement is not to be announced till next week, but you are such a friend of Mr. Gryce's that they both wish you to be the first to know of their happiness." In Mrs. Peniston's youth, fashion had returned to town in October, therefore on the 10th day of the month the blinds of her Fifth Avenue residence were drawn up, and the eyes of the dying gladiator in bronze who occupied the drawing room window resumed their survey of that deserted thoroughfare. The first 2 weeks after her return represented to Mrs. Peniston the domestic equivalent of a religious retreat. She went through the linen and blankets in the precise spirit of the penitent exploring the inner folds of conscience. She sought for moths as the stricken soul seeks for lurking infirmities. The topmost shelf of every closet was made to yield up its secret. Cellar and coal bin were probed to their darkest depths, and, as a final stage in the lustral rites, the entire house was swathed in penitential white and deluged with expiatory soaps. It was on this phase of the proceedings that Miss Bard entered on the afternoon of her return from the Van Osburgh wedding. The journey back to town had not been calculated to soothe her nerves. Though Evie Van Osburgh's engagement was still officially a secret, it was one of which the innumerable intimate friends of the family were already possessed, and the trainful of returning guests buzzed with illusions and anticipations. Lily was acutely aware of her own part in this drama of innuendo. She knew the exact quality of the amusement the situation evoked. The crude forms in which her friends took their pleasure included a loud enjoyment of such complications. The zest of surprising destiny in the act of playing a practical joke. Lily knew well enough how to bear herself in difficult situations. As he had, to a shade, the exact manner between victory and defeat. Every insinuation was shed without an effort by the bright indifference of her manner. But she was beginning to feel the strain of the attitude. The reaction was more rapid, and she lapsed to a deeper self-disgust. As was always the case with her, this moral repulsion found a physical outlet in a quickened distaste for her surroundings. She revolted from the complacent ugliness of Mrs. Peniston's black walnut, from the slippery gloss of the vestibule tiles, and the mingled odor of sapolio and furniture polish that met her at the door. The stairs were still carpetless, and on the way up to her room she was arrested on the landing by an encroaching tide of soapsuits. Gathering up her skirts, she drew aside with an impatient gesture, and as she did so she had the odd sensation of having already found herself in the same situation, but in different surroundings. It seemed to her that she was again descending the staircase from Selden's rooms, and looking down to remonstrate with the dispenser of the soapy flood, she found herself met by a lifted stare which had once before confronted her under similar circumstances. It was the charwoman of the Benedict who, resting on crimson elbows, examined her with the same unflinching curiosity, the same apparent reluctance to let her pass. On this occasion, however, Miss Bart was on her own ground. "Don't you see that I wish to go by? Please move your pail," she said sharply. The woman at first seemed not to hear. Then, without a word of excuse, she pushed back her pail and dragged a wet floor cloth across the landing, keeping her eyes fixed on Lily while the latter swept by. It was insufferable that Mrs. Peniston should have such creatures about the house, and Lily entered her room resolved that the woman should be dismissed that evening. Mrs. Peniston, however, was at the moment inaccessible to remonstrance. Since early morning she had been shut up with her maid, going over her furs, a process which formed the culminating episode in the drama of household renovation. In the evening also Lily found herself alone, for her aunt, who rarely dined out, had responded to the summons of a Van Alston cousin who was passing through town. The house, in its state of unnatural immaculateness and order, was as dreary as a tomb, and as Lily, turning from her brief repast between shrouded sideboards, wandered into the newly uncovered glare of the drawing room, she felt as though she were buried alive in the stifling limits of Mrs. Peniston's existence. She usually contrived to avoid being at home during the season of domestic renewal. On the present occasion, however, a variety of reasons had combined to bring her to town, and foremost among them was the fact that she had fewer invitations than usual for the autumn. She had so long been accustomed to pass from one country house to another, till the close of the holidays brought her friends to town, that the unfilled gaps of time confronting her produced a sharp sense of waning popularity. It was as she had said to Selden, people were tired of her. They would welcome her in a new character, but as Miss Bart they knew her by heart. She knew herself by heart too, and was sick of the old story. There were moments when she longed blindly for anything different, anything strange, remote and untried. But the utmost reach of her imagination did not go beyond picturing her usual life in a new setting. She could not figure herself as anywhere but in a drawing room, diffusing elegance as a flower sheds perfume. Meanwhile, as October advanced, he had to face the alternative of returning to the Treenors or joining her aunt in town. Even the desolating dullness of New York in October, and the soapy discomforts of Mrs. Peniston's interior, seemed preferable to what might await her at Bellomont. And with an air of heroic devotion, she announced her intention of remaining with her aunt till the holidays. Sacrifices of this nature are sometimes received with feelings as mixed as those which actuate them. And Mrs. Peniston remarked to her confidential maid that, if any of the family were to be with her at such a crisis, though for 40 years as he had been thought competent to see to the hanging of her own curtains, she would certainly have preferred Miss Grace to Miss Lily. Grace Stepney was an obscure cousin, of adaptable manners and vicarious interests, who unin to sit with Mrs. Peniston when Lily dined out too continuously. Who played bezique, picked up dropped stitches, read out the deaths from the Times, and sincerely admired the purple satin drawing room curtains, the dying gladiator in the window, and the 7x5 painting of Niagara which represented the one artistic excess of Mr. Peniston's temperate career. Mrs. Peniston, under ordinary circumstances, was as much bored by her excellent cousin as the recipient of such services usually is by the person who performs them. She greatly preferred the brilliant and unreliable Lily, who did not know one end of a crochet needle from the other, and had frequently wounded her susceptibilities by suggesting that the drawing room should be done over. But when it came to hunting for missing napkins, or helping to decide whether the backstairs needed re-carpeting, Grace's judgment was certainly sounder than Lily's. Not to mention the fact that the latter resented the smell of beeswax and brown soap, and behaved as though she thought a house ought to keep clean of itself, without extraneous assistance. Seated under the cheerless blaze of the drawing-room chandelier, Mrs. Peniston never lit the lamps. Unless there was company, Lily seemed to watch her own figure retreating down vistas of neutral-tinted dullness to a middle age like Grace Stepney's. When she ceased to amuse Judy Treanor and her friends, she would have to fall back on amusing Mrs. Peniston. Whichever way she looked, she saw only a future of servitude to the whims of others, never the possibility of asserting her own eager individuality. A ring at the doorbell, sounding emphatically through the empty house, roused her suddenly to the extent of her boredom. It was as though all the weariness of the past months had culminated in the vacuity of that interminable evening. If only the ring meant a summons from the outer world, a token that she was still remembered and wanted. After some delay, a parlor maid presented herself with the announcement that there was a person outside who was asking to see Miss Bart, and on Lily's pressing for a more specific description, she added, "It's Mrs. Affin, miss. She won't say what she wants." Lily, to whom the name conveyed nothing, opened the door upon a woman in a battered bonnet, who stood firmly planted under the hall light. The glare of the unshaded gas shone familiarly on her pockmarked face, and the reddish baldness visible through thin strands of straw-colored hair. Lily looked at the charwoman in surprise. "Do you wish to see me?" she asked. "I should like to say a word to you, miss." The tone was neither aggressive nor conciliatory. It revealed nothing of the speaker's errand. Nevertheless, some precautionary instinct warned Lily to withdraw beyond earshot of the hovering parlor maid. She signed to Mrs. Affin to follow her into the drawing room and closed the door when they had entered. "What is it that you wish?" she inquired. The charwoman, after the manner of her kind, stood with her arms folded in her shawl. Unwinding the latter, she produced a small parcel wrapped in dirty newspaper. "I have something here that you might like to see, Miss Bart." She spoke the name with an unpleasant emphasis, as though her knowing it made a part of her reason for being there. To Lily, the intonation sounded like a threat. "You have found something belonging to me?" she asked, extending her hand. Mrs. Affen drew back. "Well, if it comes to that, I guess it's mine as much as anybody's," she returned. Lily looked at her perplexedly. She was sure, now, that her visitor's manner conveyed a threat, but, expert as she was in certain directions, there was nothing in her experience to prepare her for the exact significance of the present scene. She felt, however, that it must be ended as promptly as possible. "I don't understand. If this parcel is not mine, why have you asked for me?" The woman was unabashed by the question. She was evidently prepared to answer it, but like all her classes, he had to go a long way back to make a beginning, and it was only after a pause that she replied, "Colin, my husband, and was janitor to the Benedict till the first of the month. Since then he can't get nothing to do." Lily remained silent, and she continued, "Colin, it wasn't no fault of our own, neither. The agent had another man he wanted the place for, and we was put out, bag and baggage, just to suit his fancy. I had a long sickness last winter, and an operation, that ate up all we'd put by, and it's hard for me and the children, Affen being so long out of a job. After all, then, as he had come, only to ask Miss Bart, to find a place for her husband, or, more probably, to seek the young lady's intervention with Mrs. Peniston." Lily had such an air of always getting what she wanted, that she was used to being appealed to as an intermediary, and, relieved of her vague apprehension, she took refuge in the conventional formula. "I am sorry you have been in trouble," she said. "Oh, that we have, miss, and it's on just beginning. If on Gutenberg edition." End of chapter.